And now it's time for Power of Prophecy, continuing the legacy of Tex Mars, exposing evil, and promoting Jesus Christ as Savior. Here's your host, Jerry Barrett.
Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Power of Prophecy. I'm your host, Jerry Barrett. Honored to have you join me again this week. It is time for Secrets. We're up to volume number 354. You know, if we do one a month, divide that into 354, that's a whole lot of years of radio shows just devoted to this program. And it's my favorite. I love being able to just peruse all the news sites. I normally do it anyway, but I get emails from everyone out there. I look at different news sites. I'm always scouring, looking for stuff to potentially read about, write about. I hope your April newsletter has gotten to you. If you get it via email, you got it on the 1st. But if you don't have it, they went out and they are in the mail system. And hopefully they'll be arriving soon. And if you want to get on the email list, please email me, prophecy@texmars.com. You can get both. You can get the printed and the email. Or if you just want the email list, just let me know. I have a number of our friends that have emailed me and said, take me off of the regular mailing list because I know it costs so much money for postage and printing, and I'll be happy to get it via email, and I'll do it. But if you want both, I'll do that too. Just let me know, okay? Now, I've talked about Canada's euthanasia law before on this program. I think it's heinous. I think it's hideous. And I think that it leads so many, it tempts so many to take the shortcut. And I'm talking about those that are in the medical field itself. Now, socialized medicine is not the greatest thing since sliced bread. Don't let anybody fool you. I was talking about this the other night. This is Pillow Talk with Leslie. But we were talking about socialized medicine. And as many of you know, I'm a huge Tom Clancy fan. I have the entire Jack Ryan set of books. And I've read them more than once. And I was explaining to her that Jack Ryan's wife was an eye doctor. An ophthalmologist, I think is what they call it. And she went to England and she experienced socialized medicine. They were doing a procedure. Now, this is fiction. I know this. But it's based on fact. I know that too. These two eye doctors were doing a procedure on a woman. She was knocked out with anesthesia. It came to be lunchtime, and they checked with the anesthesiologist and said, we're going to go eat lunch. She's going to be okay, right? And he said, yeah, I'll have her out until you get back. So these two eye doctors with Jack Ryan's wife went to a local pub and had a plowman's lunch and a beer, a pint of beer. And then they came back and they finished the procedure. But they drank a beer at lunch. Didn't care that she was knocked out for another hour that she didn't need to be. That's socialized medicine. And when Canada introduced euthanasia, they call it the MAID Act. They took another step down that dark, slippery slope that leads straight into the abyss of hell. And I came across this story. It was in Blabberbuzz. This is an 84-year-old Canadian woman. Now, if you followed this ministry, you know when the death panels were enacted under Obamacare by Rahm Emanuel's brother Ezekiel. Ezekiel had claimed that anybody over 70 was a useless eater, because they are no longer productive members of society. If you have retired and you are not putting anything into the system, you are a useless eater, according to these bioethicists. This woman is 84. Of course, she is beyond a useless eater. Now she's a bane on the socialized medicine in Canada. At least that's the perception. Well, she woke up with some terrible pain in her back. And she went to the hospital. Her daughter helped her. And the first words out of this woman doctor's mouth was, "Would you like to consider MAID, the medical assistance in dying?" That's what MAID stands for. They wanted to euthanize this woman instead of fixing her. Her name is Miriam Lancaster. She was at Vancouver General Hospital. She was later diagnosed with a fractured sacrum. But the culture of death is beginning to permeate Western medicine. The culture of death. Seniors may be steered to state-sanctioned suicide rather than care. Now, Ms. Lancaster said she was stunned that a physician's first response to her condition was not a treatment, but an invitation to die. Now, this lady did acknowledge the pain was intense, but she had gone to this hospital for help, not to die. Listen to this woman's testimony.
"I am 84 years old, and a year ago, an amazing thing happened. When I got out of bed one morning, I was suddenly in excruciating pain, so much so that my daughter came running in from another room. She called an ambulance. Off I went to the Vancouver General Hospital, and I was approached by a young lady doctor who the very first words out of her mouth is, 'We would like to offer you MAID.' I was taken aback. That was the last thing on my mind. I just wanted to find out why I was in pain. I did not want to die. And I was a month in hospital, came home and recuperated nicely enough that I could take some trips. Off I went last year to Cuba before the problems today in Cuba. And then this just recently, I have been to Mexico and Guatemala. So my recovery has been amazing, and there was no need for MAID to even be suggested."
She's an active 84-year-old woman, and they want to kill her. Now, this program, this MAID program, has been marketed as voluntary euthanasia, but it has steadily expanded from a defined end-of-life case to a far broader range of conditions. And this is raising alarm among pro-life advocates and defenders of the disabled and the elderly. Now, growing up, I was taught to respect our elders because they've been there, done that. We are to gather knowledge and wisdom from our elders, not poke them with a needle and kill them. Ms. Lancaster said doctors also floated euthanasia when her late husband John was battling cancer back in 2023. She said, quote, "Of course he turned it down. We are churchgoers. We both are ready to go when the Lord calls us, and that's what happened to him," close quote. This is what happens when you have unchecked secular progressivism and socialized medicine. The system measures human worth in terms of cost and convenience. Unbelievable. Well, I want to get with this. We've heard about the SAVE Act. The Senate has taken a recess, their vacation, for the Easter holiday. Those antichrists in the Senate who are not Christian, but they are of their father, the devil, every single one of them. Well, I say that. That's an overgeneralization. But I would hazard a guess that 90% of them are heathens. They're bound for hell unless they repent of their sins. But they're on their Easter break, and the SAVE Act, the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility, the SAVE Act, has been sidelined again. The Republican leadership in the Senate has been null, nil, zip, zilch, nada. It is horrible. But you will constantly hear the loony left in the controlled media keep saying that this SAVE Act constitutes voter oppression because it will impose undue burdens on people to get documents. Now, I'm going to stop right there. This was an article in the Western Journal written by Douglas Golden. If you want to get on an airplane, what do you have to have? Identification. I recently had to renew my driver's license. I had done it online the last time, so I had to make an appointment and go to the Texas DMV and fill out a form and get my license renewed. And because these same jackwagons in Congress passed the Real ID Act, you have to have more than one form of proof that you're an American and that you should get this driver's license. And I just happened to take my passport with me to renew my driver's license because my driver's license is expired. The bank wouldn't take it when I had to get something notarized. So I had to come back with my passport for that. So I go to the DMV, I show them my driver's license, I give her my passport, and she says, I'm glad you brought this. And I'm going, I had to have that? Yes, sir. You wouldn't have been able to get your license renewed without it. What? This is that Real ID Act. Nobody has studied that, myself included. But I took my passport on the off chance that I would have to verify I was who I said I was. Although I've been this way 63 years. I've been Jerry for 63 years, but I had to prove it to the DMV. You have to have an identification to fly, to do anything at the bank, to cash a check. Why do you not have to have identification to vote? This is the problem I have with the mantra that the loony left is trying to sell on this SAVE Act. And you will hear loony left demon rats in Congress say that minorities lack the capacity to get these ID cards. They're calling them stupid or lazy or both. In this article, Douglas Golden posits a question. If you don't know where your birth certificate is, no vote for you. This is the mantra that you will hear. Change your name because you got married, no vote for you. Lost your Social Security card? No vote for you. Well, one of the editors at Twitchy, and that's one of the websites I go to, great news site, twitchy.com, this editor decided to check to see how easy or hard it would be to get the documents needed for this SAVE Act. So, she wrote, quote, first, birth certificate. Contacted the health department of the county where I was born. They overnighted a certified copy to me the next day. Total cost, $14. Social Security card? Quote, contacted Social Security on their website. They asked if I was sure I needed the card since I won't likely be asked for it. I went ahead and got it. Took 5 business days to arrive. Total cost, $0. So far she's gotten a birth certificate and a Social Security card for $14. But she got married. Whoa. Well, quote, went to the vital doc site of the county where we were hitched, filled everything out online, arrived in 3 days, total cost $5. So she spent $19 to get these 3 documents. These were all certified legal documents, $19, less than 5 business days to have them all. Now, she said, if I had lived where I was born or married, it would have been a day tops. But here's what the Democrats want you to know. They want to scare you into believing that this is near impossible. The first one is Representative Hillary Scholten, a Democrat, who claims the SAVE Act will prevent women from voting because they haven't changed the name on their birth certificate after getting married. Listen to Hillary Scholten.
In Michigan's 3rd District alone, 160,000 women could find themselves unable to register simply because when they got married, they didn't change both their ID and their birth certificate. 160,000 women.
Oh no, 160,000 women. That's if you believe that, then it would be Republican and Democrat women. Well, not to be outdone, one of the squad members, Pramila Jayapal, says somebody would have to either get a passport or have a birth certificate and go through this rigmarole every time they want to vote. Listen to what she says.
I don't know about you, but 50% of Americans, if I said, do you know where your birth certificate is? I think most people would say, no idea. Not sure I even got one. Don't know where it is. And then on top of that, if you look at passports, 50% of Americans don't have passports. They don't travel. It costs a lot of money to get one. And if you are a woman who changed your name when you got married, it probably means that your driver's license is not the same as your birth certificate, which means, again, that you are up a creek without the paddle. And, you know, this is affecting everybody. It was interesting. I was on my flight home last week, and the flight attendant came up to me and said, you are going to vote no on the SAVE Act, right? And I was so surprised that she had heard about it because it hasn't gotten that much play in the media. But she was just livid about the idea that she would have to spend money and time trying to either get a passport. She was a flight attendant. So she, you know, she was like, look, I do travel outside, so I do have a passport. But the idea that somebody would have to either get a passport or have a birth certificate and have to go through this rigmarole every single time they want to vote is, you know, she said, I feel like they're just trying to get me not to vote. And I said, bingo, that's exactly what's happening.
Bingo, 100% false. Less than 5 days, this editor at Twitchy had all the documents she needed. It's not rocket science. I've had to get a certified birth certificate. I was born on the Air Force Base in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And I've had to contact Vital Statistics and get a certified copy of my birth certificate so that I could get my passport. It's not that hard. It's really not. And all they're doing is trying to scare people. Kamala Harris. Oh, yeah. The queen of the word salad. She actually says that the SAVE Act can't be passed because something like 40% of Americans don't have those documents. You can get them. Quit lying. The outright lies, the misinformation. You know, the demon rats were huge on disinformation and misinformation for those of us who exposed the hoax that was the scamdemic. But they have no qualms about doing that for something that makes perfect sense to the majority of Americans. And I don't care if they lean left, right, or in the middle. They want voter ID. Last but not least, Shifty Schiff. He was on the Senate floor. California, you could have done so much better than to vote this pencil neck geek as your senator. But the party machine in California got him in there. He's crooked as all get out. But he's there. He was on the floor talking about, well, they all have the same talking points. Listen to what Shifty Schiff had to say.
Let's say you're just like Melania Knaus. You're a naturalized citizen and wanting to vote this November. You may even want to vote for the Republicans on your ballot. Well, now you discover you're like 69 million other women who've changed their name when they got married, which means that Melania Trump will now have to not only bring her proof of citizenship, but also her marriage license to prove she's eligible to vote. And so in this Republican Save America Act world, to even try to register for your constitutional right to vote, you might have to pay $165 to get a passport, take the hours it will require of you to get to the clerk's office, the wages you'll miss by getting there, the gas you'll have to buy at a much higher rate now.
Come on, Shifty. Be honest. I don't care what party you're in. If you're working for your constituents, be honest. quit lying and scaring the people. You are proffering so much misinformation out there, and the controlled media is lock, stock, and barrel with you, spewing the same lies and garbage. Okay, I'm done with that rant. Now, I came across an article. Well, actually, I came across a video of Bob Costas talking about transgenderism, the trannies that are competing as women that have transitioned or started the trend, whatever. The mental illness is real. But anyway, so I'm thinking, okay, wait a minute. This has got to be AI. There is no way that the loony liberal that Bob Costas is would agree with the International Olympic Committee saying that they're going to test for XY and XX chromosomes and men cannot compete against women in the Summer Olympics that are going to be held in California. There's no way Bob Costas would say this. Well, got an article from BlabberBuzz written by Greg Moriarty, and it's true. Greg wrote that the IOC announced that with the 2028 Olympic Games in LA, men will be prohibited from competing in women category. This marks a significant course correction after years of deference to radical gender ideology. All right. So the president of the International Olympic Committee is Christy Coventry. She herself is a former gold medalist in the Olympics. And she framed the decision squarely around fairness and safety rather than politics or activism. Ms. Coventry drew the obvious conclusion that many on the left have tried to evade. She said, quote, "It is absolutely clear that it would not be fair for biological males to compete in the female category. In addition, in some sports, it would simply not be safe," close quote. This reminded me of the boxing match where that dude beat up all those women to win a gold medal as a female. And then a year later, he admits, well, yeah, I'm a dude. Because he would have got his rear end kicked if he'd have competed against men. But he got a gold medal as a chick. But Bob Costas addressed this issue in a video that was posted on Twitter or X. Now, he does show his liberal leanings in this video, but he recognizes a biological reality. Listen to what Bob Costas had to say.
Common sense is not transphobic. There's a reason why the high school champions don't compete with the college champions. Mm. There is a reason why no trans man who was once a woman and has become a man has ever competed successfully with men in the Olympics. If Caitlin Clark could play in the NBA, everybody would applaud it. That'd be an incredible thing. But if the last guy on the bench of an NBA team went to the WNBA and started averaging 40 points a game, everyone would know that is BS. Mm. There's a reason why Sugar Ray Leonard, who was a contemporary of Mike Tyson, didn't fight Mike Tyson. They were in different weight classes. Mm. There is a reason why there are men's and women's sports and why Title IX was one of the truly progressive pieces of legislation in the best sense of the word progressive under the Nixon administration. It changed everything. It doesn't make any sense to have a swimmer who was the 472nd ranked swimmer when he was a man at Penn either winning or coming close to winning against women a year and a half after transitioning. If that's what the person wants to do, that person should be treated with dignity and respect. But there ought to be common sense, and common sense is not transphobic.
Common sense is not transphobic. Wow. Bob Costas. There are obvious competitive disparities. People in sports understand this. The people in politics refuse to acknowledge it. Now, Costas mentioned Title IX. Title IX is a federal law that mandates equal opportunity for women in education and became the backbone of women's athletics at both the high school and collegiate levels. So, the women in college have the same total number of scholarships as the men So the football team gets 85 scholarships. The women get 85 scholarships. That's how that works. That's how Title IX was supposed to work. Not to allow dudes to compete as chicks. We will see if the NCAA and other states recognize the truth that the International Olympic Committee has put forth. We'll have to wait and see if that comes to pass. All right. I want to get to this before we have to take our halftime break. Oklahoma, when you think of the political spectrum, what color do you see Oklahoma as? Blue or red or purple? For my entire adulthood, they have been staunchly conservative. I have friends from Oklahoma. They are staunchly conservative. Not Republican, conservative. But it seems as if the tides are turning in Oklahoma. Now, the Republicans control the House and the Senate. They have a supermajority. But a Republican representative in Oklahoma for the state has introduced House Bill 3660, which will formally recognize natural organic reduction, this is a euphemism for human composting, as a form of cremation under Oklahoma law. They want to compost human beings. It cleared the House with a 59-37 vote. Republicans and Democrats both support this bill. Republican State Representative Jim Shaw wrote in a post on X, quote, "Today the House advanced HB 3660, a bill to legalize the use of composted human bodies as fertilizer. If this bill is put into law, Oklahoma will join 14 blue states that have legalized this process. So instead of outlawing this type of practice outright, we're on track to take the use of humanure as fertilizer another disgusting step forward." That's his word, humanure. Now, I don't know how many of you recall the food poisoning from lettuce and kale that came from Mexico because they use human excrement to fertilize the lettuce. And if you don't clean it thoroughly, people got food poisoning from it. But they want to use human waste and human bodies as compost for fertilizer. The states that have legalized it are Arizona, California, Colorado, Delaware, Georgia, Maine, Maryland, Minnesota, Nevada, New Jersey, New York, Oregon, Vermont, and Washington. Now, true conservatives see this measure as another step in a broader cultural drift away from traditional respect for the dead and towards a technocratic green ideology. Now, the state Senate can still put the kibosh on this bill. But if it goes through the Senate, we have to wait and see if the rhino, that's the governor, will bother to sign it into law or veto it. But it's in the air. Human composting. I wasn't sure what this is. So in this article, written by Maria Angelino at Blabberbuzz, she writes, quote, "The process uses large tanks, containers, or similar vessels to hold human remains together with straw, wood chips, and or other natural materials for a period of time of about 4 to 6 weeks. When the process is complete, the family of the deceased has the opportunity, oh boy, to receive the soil material which is suitable for spreading in a garden, planting a special tree, or scattering in other meaningful locations such as garden, memorial forests, or other special place. Should this environmental fashion trump moral and cultural norms about how a civilized society treats its own?" Well, that's going to take care of the first half. I want to thank you for giving me some of your time. I have to take a pause, but when I come back, I have got a whole lot more for you. You're listening to Power of Prophecy. Stay with us, won't you? I'll be right back. Hello, friends. Jerry Barrett back with you again. Culture of Death. It's a book written by Wesley Smith.
this book reveals how more and more doctors have withdrawn from the Hippocratic Oath and how bioethicists influence policy by posing questions such as whether organs may be harvested from the terminally ill and disabled. This is a passionate yet coolly reasoned book about the current crisis in medical ethics by an author who has made the new thanatology his consuming interest. In the beginning, you read a story about a young man named Christopher. He's a teenager. He's suffered brain damage in an auto accident. He develops a 105-degree fever following weeks of unconsciousness. His father, John, asked the attending physician for help. The doctor refused. Why bother? The boy's life was effectively over. But Mr. Campbell refused to accept this verdict. The doctor was just going to let the boy die. But the father demanded treatment and began to threaten legal action. The doctor finally relented. In this book, you will hear this harrowing tale of a father who is fighting for the life of his teenage son. With treatment, the temperature subsided almost immediately. And soon after, the boy regained consciousness and was learning to walk again. Now, he's not going to be 100%, but his life mattered. Thank God that the father stood up to these physicians that deem themselves judge, jury, and executioner for patients. There are a number of them coming through medical school now that are taught these bioethics. You weigh this option versus that option. This is just one of the many stories that Mr. Smith recounts in this award-winning critique of the modern bioethics movement. In this newly updated edition, Mr. Smith chronicles how the threats to the equality of human life have accelerated in recent years from the proliferation of euthanasia and the Brittany Maynard-assisted suicide firestorm to the potential death panels posed by Obamacare and the explosive Terri Schiavo controversy. This book is vitally important that you get a copy. It's 333 pages. We're asking $18 for this book, Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine. I cannot believe this is happening in our country, but it is. And knowledge is power. I urge you to get a copy of Culture of Death. You can get your copy by phoning us toll-free in Canada and the United States at 1-800-234-9673. You can phone us on our regular line at 512-263-9780. We're in the office Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Central Time. We take Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express. Now, if you want to order online, you can do so in our secure shopping cart at powerofprophecy.com. We also take Visa, MasterCard, Discover, and American Express there. There'll be an ad for this book on the main page. Click on the link, add it to your basket, fill in your name, address, charge card, shipping method, submit it. We get it. We get it coming to you, usually the next business day. If you're not sure the title, Culture of Death, type in euthanasia. That should pull it up in the search engine. And everything that we have on that topic will pop up. And you can select the items that you want to add to your cart. Now, if you want to send in a check, money order, or cash, please make your check or money order payable to Power of Prophecy. And you can mail it to us here at 4819 R.O. Drive, Suite 102 in Spicewood, Texas, and our zip code is 78669. We can't wait to get your orders in, we can't wait to get them shipped to you, and we can't wait to hear your feedback after you've read Culture of Death.
Okay, and now let's return to our regular program. Today we're covering secrets. We're up to volume number 354. Came across this in Western Journal, written by Michael Schwartz. And I have a problem with these judges, these activist judges. But law-abiding citizens should not have to live the way these activist judges want us to live. These lunatic judges continue to release career criminals back into society where they commit more crime. Now, I'm going to pose this question to you. Let's say you and I are out on the town one night having a good time, and you're driving us, and I decide to go into a liquor store and rob it. And then I jump in the car and tell you, go, go, go. And you peel out of the liquor store, and we've got a couple $100. Woohoo! Right? If we get arrested, are you innocent or are you an accomplice? In my eyes, you're an accomplice because you helped me get away. Likewise, with these lunatic judges, they are an accomplice when a criminal that they let out because their politics says, well, I need to give this guy a break. Their ideology gets in the way of the law. I'm not going to sentence this guy to prison. I want this guy to be on probation. And maybe, hopefully, he'll learn his lesson and quit being a criminal. The judge is an accomplice in future criminal activities that this convict that should be rotting in prison perpetrates. That's my judgment. Well, I'm not alone. The Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department filed a petition with the Nevada Supreme Court instead of complying with an order from a judge, Eric Goodman, and his family's got a long line of political connections in Las Vegas, Nevada. This judge wanted to release a dangerous career criminal under the department's electronic monitoring program. His name is Joshua Sanchez Lopez, 36 years old. He was arrested on a charge of grand larceny of a motor vehicle. He's a convicted felon, most recently incarcerated after drug and involuntary manslaughter convictions. He has 35 arrests on his record. Now, if you had common sense and you deduct that this guy has 35 crimes and 35 convictions, in 36 years, he probably needs to spend the rest of his days in prison. Wouldn't you think so? Well, the department told the judge it could not release Sanchez Lopez into their electronic monitoring program because it was an issue of public safety. Well, the judge was taken aback by the asides of their affront. And he threatened the department with sanctions for contempt of court. The Supreme Court of Nevada will now decide whether, under state law, the judge or the county sheriff has final say over the defendant's fitness for electronic monitoring. Let's hope the Supreme Court justices aren't as lunatic as the judge in Las Vegas. Recent examples of these soft-on-crime judges suggest a dangerous epidemic. In the last year alone, repeat offenders have slain innocent victims with shocking brazenness. A sane society recognizes that career criminals should not remain in the community. Peaceful, law-abiding Americans have a right to live without criminals in their midst. And these lunatic judges that keep putting them back on the streets should be held accountable. Boy, I'm on a rant today, aren't I? Woo! All right. Came across this one in Modernity News, written by Steve Watson. There is a video that has gone viral. A woman filmed it in a CVS store. And in the video, she shows that the darker shades of makeup are locked behind plexiglass. They're locked away. The lighter shades of makeup are not locked up. And it's created a buzz. But stores are starting to secure what the thieves are stealing the most. And they're using data to back it up. Steve writes, this isn't racism. It's basic loss prevention. Only a lunatic would think that by safeguarding the most commonly robbed items under lock and key is racist. Retailers don't waste money locking up products that don't walk out the door. The National Retail Federation's 2025 Impact of Retail Theft and Violence report shows shoplifting incidents jumped 19% from 2023 to 2024. This is on top of a staggering 93% jump since 2019. Retailers are reporting double-digit increases in both shoplifting and merchandise theft heading into 2026. Aggressive thieves are becoming the norm. They are projecting nearly $48 billion in losses this year alone. That's ridiculous. Now, they have nationwide arrest data from 2019. That is the most comprehensive recent breakdown that's available. Shows that black Americans accounted for 26.6% of shoplifting arrests while making up just 13% of the population. The loony left will continue to scream systemic racism whenever stores act on reality. The stores see one color, green. Stores don't care about skin color. They care about profit and loss. They want to see green, not red. And if the data shows that the darker shades of makeup are the items that are being shoplifted the most, those are the ones the data supports to lock away. Amari King posted on X, and it's at AmiriKing, on May 27th in 2025. I got a screenshot of it. He writes, there are 332 million people in the United States. 9.09% of Americans shoplift. That's 30,178,800 people in total. 69.4% of shoplifters are white. 30.2% of shoplifters are black. That means there are 20,944,087 white shoplifters in the U.S., and 9,113,997 black shoplifters in the U.S. This equates to, I'm still reading from Mr. King's post, of the 250 million plus white people in America, 8.3% of them steal. Of the 45 million plus black people in America, 20% of them steal. Statistically, black people shoplift more than anyone. Furthermore, black people make up only 13.6% of the population, but account for a third of all shoplifting. He writes, and this is continuing. Now, some people are going to call me racist, like we haven't all watched 1.5 million plus videos of black people pillaging Nike, Foot Locker, and Rite Aid. Statistically, if 100 white people enter a store, 8 of them are going to steal. If 100 black people walk into the store, 20 of them are going to steal. 20% of black people shoplift, 8% of white people shoplift, again, per FBI crime data. It takes 200 million more white people to shoplift, just a fraction of what black people shoplift. There's more. Unbelievable. He puts out the numbers. And underneath his post, other users on X had comments. Tyler wrote, it's not racism, it's statistics. Pac-Man wrote, quote, so now let me guess that's racist. Maybe those are the colors that are stolen more. Why is it always a race issue, close quote. SW wrote, quote, that's called following the research, close quote. So this is what happens when businesses refuse to play the woke game and simply follow the data. Real theft has real consequences, and retailers have to stop it. If the prosecutors start prosecuting and imprisoning these shoplifters, white and black, I don't care. If you're stealing, it's against the law. Go to jail. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. lock them up. When reality starts back in the court system, then maybe retailers will be able to remove all of the products that are hidden behind lock and key. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. All right, let's move to Chicago. Last year, a man named Lawrence Reed was arrested for setting a woman on fire aboard a Chicago commuter train. You remember reading about that? Sadly, it wasn't his first arrest or a second. No, he had a total of 72 arrests counted in his 50 years of age. Just a few months prior, he was arrested for assaulting a social worker, and the judge, when told Reed was a threat who couldn't be safely monitored, told the prosecutor, quote, "I can't keep everybody out of jail because the state's attorney wants me to," close quote. Reed was jailed without bail in the case where he set that woman on fire. This 26-year-old was burned over 50% of her body. But the mayor of Chicago, Brandon Johnson, wasn't about to let people tell him what he needed to change as far as the laws go to ensure that these career criminals stay behind bars. This is his response.
"We cannot incarcerate our way out of violence. We've already tried that, and we've ended up with the largest prison population in the world without solving the problems of crime and violence. The addiction on jails and incarceration in this country, we have moved past that. It is racist, it is immoral, it is unholy, and it is not the way to drive violence down."
So Brandon Johnson must have grown up in the timeout, everybody gets a participation trophy era. Because when I made a mistake as a kid, I got paddled. Mom, dad, the school, there were consequences for your actions. If you acted good, you got a pat on the head. If you acted bad, you got a pat on the butt. Well, it was longer. It was a little harder than a pat. But you follow my logic there. But he refuses to admit that he says it. You can't incarcerate your way out of violent crime. Yes, you can. Build more jails. Build more prisons. Lock these criminals, thugs, punks up. Goodness. Sheridan Gorman, 18-year-old girl, freshman at Loyola College in Chicago, was murdered. The alleged killer is a 25-year-old Venezuelan in this country illegally. But not only was he here illegally, he had a criminal record. He was arrested by Border Patrol in 2023. He was arrested again for retail theft in Chicago. Chicago is a sanctuary city. He didn't appear for the charges, and an arrest warrant was issued. But how hard did Chicago PD care to look for this guy? What until he killed this 18-year-old girl? The feds say he should have not been put back on the street. They should have gotten a hold of him. I'm sure they had a retainer. Send him back. Get him out of this country. So the judge that let him go is an accomplice in this murder, in my eyes. According to Alderwoman in Chicago, Maria Haddon, she's a Democrat, a demon rat. She said, quote, "They go out on the pier. They walk around. The kids were out doing normal things people do in this neighborhood. And it sounds like this might have been a wrong place, wrong time, running into a person who had a gun," close quote. Now, she has closed her office since making this idiotic statement. She is catching a lot of grief, and she should. What a heartless response. If this jackwagon had been sent back to his country of origin, I don't care, send him to El Salvador to CICOT, but get his butt out of America where he can harm anybody else. Oh, no, not in sanctuary cities. They turn them loose. They forbid the police to work with ICE. The family of this young lady said, quote, "We are gravely disappointed by the policies and failures that allowed this individual to remain in a position to commit this crime. When systems fail, the consequences are not abstract. They are real. And in our case, they are permanent." Now, reporter had the gumption, good for this reporter, to ask Brandon Johnson if he was going to offer an apology to the family of this innocent girl. This is his response.
Will you take this opportunity to apologize to Sheridan's parents for the policies that you promoted that have that would directly caused her death? That suspect would not be in the city, would not be in the country, but for your policies. Will you take this opportunity to apologize?
Well, again, I believe that we're all grieving the loss of Sheridan and other folks who have lost their lives because of senseless violence. And let's just be very clear, between the Safety Act and the Welcoming City Ordinance, the Welcoming City Ordinance was passed 40 years ago by the first black mayor in the history of Chicago. And the Safety Act was passed under the governor, at that time who was a Republican, Governor Rauner.
You know, growing up, I was taught two wrongs don't make a right. Where is the harm in apologizing? Brandon Johnson is an accessory to the murder of this young girl because he hasn't removed the restrictions that his sanctuary city put in place under Beetlejuice. I mean, Lori Lightfoot. The fact is, you can jail your way out of crime. You can deport your way out of crime. It's not racist. And it's not unfair. The only immoral thing is to continue to allow these sanctuary cities to refuse to jail criminals so they can continue to commit crimes against American citizens. When will the Democrats wake up and smell the coffee and realize that innocent people are dying because of their idiotic policies? Speaking of idiotic policies, New York, you've got a humdinger of a governor. New York City has a humdinger of a mayor. You get what you vote for, I reckon. Well, Kathy Hochul is up for re-election this year. She's got a problem, a big problem. Every single policy the Democrats like to push increases costs, reduces the quality of life, and drives people out of these blue states. One of the worst problems that Hochul faces is skyrocketing energy bills. The prospect that those prices will rise even more and faster in the next few years as this climate deadline rapidly approaches is unbelievable. And she wants to put the brakes, pump the brakes on this climate law that New York passed and she signed into law. Listen to what Governor Hochul had to say.
And this will make families have to endure impossible choices. I will not stand by and let that happen. I believe that the goals of this law, to build a clean energy future and strengthen our energy system for years to come, is a noble one. I'm committed to it. But I also have to take responsibility to protect people from rising costs. If the path forward is only going to drive prices higher, then we have to act. And that's why I'm calling on the legislature to work with me in the next few weeks before the budget is due to come up with a common sense plan that understands the realities that we're dealing with today. This is not the world of 2019 as much as we wish it were when this law was first passed. We will not walk away from our climate goals, but make sure that the path we're on is realistic and fair to the people we serve. Because a climate policy that leaves working families behind is not a sustainable path forward.
Isn't it funny how reality strikes when it's time for re-election? So Hochul wants to delay the climate goals that she and the other demon rats were so excited about back in 2019 when they implemented this law. The law calls for gradually decreasing greenhouse gas emissions with certain deadlines. Now, those proposed adjustments include delaying until 2030 now, and amending how certain emissions will be measured. What has changed since 2019? Not a lot, really. Every sane person then knew these goals were unattainable. The pursuit of them would inevitably mean skyrocketing energy costs. The only difference between then and now is the deadlines are approaching and the cost increases are becoming a political liability. Steve Guest posted on X, quote, Governor Hochul's top budget official elevated concerns about the cost of the state's climate law that the governor once championed. To achieve New York's outrageous climate goals, it would add more than $1.90 to gasoline prices and raise costs for a family with oil, heat, and gas vehicle by $3,000 annually, close quote. Now, the climate activists are alarmed that she's wanting to put the brakes on this. When the law became official in 2019, it directed the state to issue regulations on reducing emissions by January of 2024. We're in April 2026. The rules have never surfaced. Climate groups have sued the state because these regulations have not been put forth. The governor cited a memo from New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, a state agency that she oversees. If the state begins penalizing polluters, the cost of those fines would be passed on to oil and gas customers, with some paying about $4,000 more in utility bills each year. Do you know who's been warning about these ridiculous and insane laws? Conservatives. Costs have been skyrocketing for years. And that doesn't even include these insanely expensive subsidies for the failing green energy projects. The Democrats warn about a fake crisis, promise the moon, spend tons of money, make things infinitely worse, and say they will fix the problem. The Democrats are the problem. And until the people of New York wake up and get all the demon rats out of the state assembly and the governor's mansion, it's going to be status quo. Nothing is going to change. You're continually going to live under the thumb of high prices and idiotic laws. And because they keep raising prices, this is another article. New Yorkers, affluent New Yorkers, are flocking to Florida. It took place at big time in 2025, as Mayor Zohran Mamdani looked like he was going to win the election, even more of the rich left New York and New York City. Mamdani was calling for massive tax increases on the top income earners as part of his far-left policy that included free daycare and city-run grocery stores. These programs cost money. Where do you get the money? Well, I'm going to tax the rich. That's what Ocasio-Cortez said on her dress. Tax the rich. The rich aren't going to put up with it. So Hochul was asked about the tax increases at a fireside chat hosted by Politico. The reporter was Nick Reisman. Hochul said, quote, I need people who are high net worth to support the generous social programs we want to have in our state. Now, there are some patriotic millionaires who stepped up. Okay, cut me the checks if you want to be supportive. But first, maybe the first step should be to go down to Palm Beach and see who we can bring back home because our tax base has been eroded. Who eroded the tax base, Kathy? You did. Mamdani did. Your cohorts, the demon rats that are in the state assembly. When are you going to pull your head out of the sand and see the truth? Oh, it's election time. You're starting to see it now, aren't you? An April 2023 Siena College poll showed 27% of New York residents were planning to leave the state within the next 5 years. That would be 2028. 31% say they will leave when they retire. Now, Hochul had previously poo-pooed all these rich people leaving New York. She said they're not New Yorkers. But now she wants to go down to Palm Beach and grab them by the scruff of their neck and drag them back to New York because they need the tax base. Golly. Idiocy. It's unchecked. It really is crazy. Well, I think I've ranted enough. I want to thank you for tuning in and giving me an hour of your time. I greatly appreciate it. And as always, I pray you will tune in again next week at this same time. Tune in and discover the power of prophecy.